We are starting chapter 11 of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. This is called The Sorting Hat's New Song. Harry did not want to tell the others that he and Luna were having the same hallucination, if that was what it was. So he said nothing about the horses as he sat down inside the carriage and slammed the door behind him. Nevertheless, he could not help watching the silhouettes of the horses moving beyond the window. "Did everyone see that grubby plank woman?" asked Ginny. "What's she doing here? Hagrid can't have left, can he?"
"It's grubbly plank."
"No, you're right. Grubbly plank."
"No, you keep saying grubby. She's not grubby."
"It's what it looks like. Grubby plank. Okay."
"No, say it right."
"Grubbly plank." "I'm quite glad if he has," said Luna. "He isn't a very good teacher, is he?" "She's right." "Yes, he is," said Harry, Ron, and Ginny angrily. Harry glared at Hermione. She cleared her throat and quickly said, "Yes, he's very good." "Well, we think he's a bit of a joke in Ravenclaw," said Luna, unfazed. "You've got a rubbish sense of humor, then," Ron snapped, as the wheels below them creaked into motion. Luna did not seem perturbed by Ron's rudeness. On the contrary, she simply watched him for a while, as though he were a mildly interesting television program. Rattling and swaying, the carriages moved in convoy up the road. When they passed between the stone pillars topped with winged boars on either side of the gates to the school grounds, Harry leaned forward to try and see whether there were any lights on in Hagrid's cabin by the Forbidden Forest, but the grounds were in complete darkness. Hogwarts Castle, however, loomed ever closer, a towering mass of turrets, jet black against the dark sky, here and there a window blazing fiery bright above them. The carriages jingled to a halt near the stone steps leading up to the oak front doors, and Harry got out of the carriage first. He turned again to look for lit windows by the forest, but there was definitely no sign of life within Hagrid's cabin. Unwittingly, because he had half hoped they would have vanished, he turned his eyes instead upon the strange skeletal creatures standing quietly in the chill night air, their blank white eyes gleaming. Harry had once before had the experience of seeing something that Ron could not. That had been a reflection in a mirror, something much more insubstantial than 100 very solid-looking beasts strong enough to pull a fleet of carriages. If Luna was to be believed, the beasts had always been there but invisible. Why, then, could Harry suddenly see them, and why could Ron not? "Are you coming or what?" said Ron beside him. "Oh, yeah," said Harry quickly, and they joined the crowd hurrying up the stone steps into the castle. The entrance hall was ablaze with torches and echoing with footsteps as the students crossed the flagstone floor for the double doors to the right, leading to the great hall and the start of term feast. The four long house tables in the great hall were filling up under the starless black ceiling, which was just like the sky they could glimpse through the high windows. Candles floated in midair all along the tables. It's like Halloween at Notre Dame. Illuminating the silvery ghosts who were dotted about the hall, and the faces of the students talking eagerly to one another, exchanging summer news, shouting greetings at friends from other houses, and eyeing one another's new haircuts and robes. Again, Harry noticed people putting their heads together to whisper as he passed. He gritted his teeth and tried to act as though he neither noticed nor cared. Luna drifted away from them while the raven... What's that? Okay. Where are you going? And we're back. Let's see where we were. Oh yeah, so they're walking through the Great Hall. Luna drifted away from them at the Ravenclaw table. The moment they reached Gryffindor's, Ginny was hailed by some fellow fourth years and left to sit with them. Harry, Ron, and Hermione and Neville found seats together about halfway down the table between nearly headless Nick, the Gryffindor ghost, and Parvati Patil, and Lavender Brown, the last two of whom gave Harry airy, overly friendly greetings that made him quite sure they'd stopped talking about him a split second before. He had more important things to worry about, however. He was looking over the student's head to the staff table that ran along the top wall to the hall. He's not there. Ron and Hermione scanned the staff table, too, but there was no real need. Hagrid's head would have been instantly obvious in any lineup. He can't have left, said Ron, sounding slightly anxious. Of course he hasn't, said Harry firmly. You don't think he's hurt or anything, do you? Hermione asked uneasily. No, said Harry at once. But where is he, then? There was a pause. Then Harry said very quietly, so that Neville, Parvati, and Lavender couldn't hear, maybe he's not back yet, you know, from his mission. The thing he was doing over the summer for Dumbledore. Yeah, that'll be it, said Ron, sounding reassured, but Hermione bit her lip, looking up and down the staff table as though hoping for some conclusive explanation of Hagrid's absence. Who's that? She said sharply, pointing toward the middle of the staff table. Harry's eyes followed hers. They lit first upon Professor Dumbledore, sitting in his high-backed golden chair at the center of the long staff table, wearing deep purple robes scattered with silvery stars and a matching hat. Dumbledore's head was inclined toward the woman sitting next to him, who was talking into his ear. She looked, Harry thought, like somebody's maiden aunt, squat, with short, curly, mouse-brown hair, in which she had placed a horrible pink Alice band that matched the fluffy pink cardigan she wore over her robes. Then she turned her face slightly to take a sip from her goblet, and he saw, with a shock of recognition, a pallid, toad-like face and a pair of prominent, pouchy eyes. "It's that Umbridge woman!" "Who?" said Hermione. "She was at my hearing. She works for Fudge." "Nice cardigan," said Ron, smirking. "She works for Fudge," Hermione repeated, frowning. "What on earth is she doing here, then?"
By the way, my dad always threw me records.
Yeah.
He was on a trip. And whenever my mom or my dad would read a line like that, or if the other one read it, my dad loved those kinds of things.
Yeah.
My mom would do it like, "Nice cardigan."
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know you guys
the
read
Weasley
these.
Comments.
Like, what's that?
I said he loves the Weasley comments, especially the twins.
Oh, yeah, the twins are great.
What were you going to say?
I was going to say, I didn't know that you guys read these aloud on family trips.
Yeah, I told you that.
I don't remember you saying that.
I have told you that several times.
Did you know? So I'm not the first to read these to you? That's a
shame.
She's
the first boy to read
them to you. But I didn't pop your Harry Potter reading cherry.
I really want to play a spot kind of like that. Oh, was I supposed to be a virgin when you met me? I'm so sorry.
Very
what
nice.
Apologize for my experiences. They made me who I am. They made me the woman you fallen in love with.
Alright, that's good.
I want to apologize for my experience, literary or sexual.
You don't need to apologize, boo. Alright, where were we? Hermione scanned the staff table, her eyes narrowed. No, she muttered. No, surely not. Harry didn't understand what she was talking about, but didn't ask. His attention had just been caught by Professor Grubblyplank. See, there you go. Who had appeared behind the staff table. She worked her way along to the very end and took the seat that ought to have been Hagrid's. That meant that the first years must have crossed the lake and reached the castle. And sure enough, a few seconds later, the doors from the entrance hall opened. A long line of scared-looking first-years entered, led by Professor McGonagall, who was carrying a stool on which sat an ancient wizard's hat, heavily patched and darned with a wide rip near the frayed brim. The buzz of talk in the great hall faded away. The first-years lined up in front of the staff table facing the rest of the students, and Professor McGonagall placed the stool carefully in front of them, then stood back. The first-years' faces glowed palely in the candlelight. Small boy in the right, in the middle of the row, looked as though he was trembling. Harry recalled fleetingly how terrified he had felt when he stood there, waiting for the unknown test that would determine which house he belonged. The whole school waited with bated breath. Then the rip near the hat's brim opened wide like a mouth, and the sorting hat burst into song. Should we read the song?
Yeah, I like this song.
All right. It's pretty long.
I like it.
All right.
And sing it.
No, no, I'm not going to sing it. I don't know what this melody is.
Sing it to a tune.
What tune?
Three Blind Mice or something like that.
What tune?
Like Three Blind Mice or something like that. Or Mary Had a Little Lamb.
How about...
Or a Bob and Prada.
Yeah, right. It won't fit to, like, Mary Had a Little Lamb.
How many syllables are there for line?
She's not good at that. See, let me read it. And then you'll see why I can't, I can't tell you the answer to that question. In times of old, when I was new, and Hogwarts barely started, the founders of our noble school thought never to be parted. United by a common goal, they had the selfsame yearning to make the world's best magic school and pass along their learning. Together we will build and teach, the four good friends decided, and never did they dream that they might someday be divided. For were there such friends anywhere, as Slytherin and Gryffindor, unless it was the second pair of Hufflepuff and Ravenclaw. So it doesn't even rhyme at all.
Shush.
So how could it have gone so wrong? How could such friendships fail? Why, I was there, and so can tell the whole sad, sorry tale. Said Slytherin, we'll teach just those whose ancestry is purest. Said Ravenclaw, we'll teach those whose intelligence is surest. Said Gryffindor, we'll teach all those with brave deeds to their name. Said Hufflepuff, I'll teach the lot and treat them just the same. Poor Hufflepuff.
No, they're not the Hufflepuff is the civil rights movement.
What's that?
Hufflepuff is the civil rights movement. All of those describe the different classes that have been held in hierarchy and whatever.
Yeah, so no.
Describes the monarchies and nobility. Gryffindor describes the feudal system with lords and knights and everything like that. Ravenclaw describes the priesthood and the academics and how they held power.
I like that one.
Hufflepuff is the civil rights movement.
I would totally be in Ravenclaw. No, you're right. But the problem is what it ends up happening is that all they put in Hufflepuff are the people that aren't smart or brave or jackasses.
The thing is, that's the masses, honey, and you have to try and educate the masses. That's what the whole country is debating about.
I know.
Everybody deserves healthcare and everybody deserves a good education, even if they aren't up to the challenge. They deserve the opportunity at it, and so you need to provide it. I'm with Hufflepuff.
Who would have thought that you would be the liberal, boo?
I know. Look at you. Mm. You're the worst.
I'm horrible. I'm a horrible person. Anyways, the difference...
Which one do you think I would be in?
What's that?
Which house would you put me in if you were the sorting hat?
I would put you in Gryffindor.
Why?
Because you're very bold and very strong.
Do you don't think I'm smart? Huh?
I won't answer that.
Answer it.
Of course you're smart.
But you wouldn't put me in Ravenclaw, and you said only the smart people would go in Ravenclaw. You even said, if Hermione's so smart, why ain't she in Ravenclaw?
I think it's more actually what you value above other things, not...
That's what I said. That's my argument.
That's what you said?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Well, there you go. Then we agree, so...
So I'm in Gryffindor.
You know what? If you give me so much attitude, I'll put you in Hufflepuff.
I don't think Hufflepuff's to have that much attitude.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay, then I'll put you in Slytherin. What with your pure ancestry and all? I know. Okay. These differences caused little strife when first they came to light, for each of the four founders had a house in which they might take only those they wanted. So, for instance, Slytherin took only pure-blood wizards of great cunning, just like him. And only those of sharpest mind were taught by Ravenclaw, while the bravest and the boldest went to daring Gryffindor. Good Hufflepuff, she took the rest and taught them all she knew. Thus the houses and their founders retained...
Hufflepuff is the best. Hufflepuff is the one.
I know, she's clearly the best teacher.
What?
She's clearly the best teacher. It's easy to teach smart kids.
Right, exactly. Or inbreds.
Or inbreds. Exactly. Exactly. Thus the houses and their founders retained friendships firm and true. She doesn't understand that you should keep the same number of syllables when you want to rhyme things. So Hogwarts worked in harmony for several happy years, but then discord crept among us, feeding on our faults and fears. The houses that, like pillars four, had once held up our school, now turned upon each other and divided sought to rule. And for a while it seemed the school must meet an early end, what with dueling and with fighting and the clash of friend on friend. At last there came a morning when old Slytherin departed, and though the fighting then died out, he left us quite downhearted. And ever since the founders four were whittled down to three, have the houses been united as they once were meant to be. And now the Sorting Hat is here, and you all know the score. I sort you into houses because that's what I'm for. But this year I'll go further. Listen closely to my song. Though condemned I am to split you, still I worry that it's wrong. Though I must fulfill my duty and must quarter every year, still I wonder whether sorting may not bring the end I fear. Oh, know the perils, read the signs, the warning history shows, for our Hogwarts is in danger from external deadly foes. And we must unite inside her, or we'll crumble from within. I have told you, I have warned you, let the sorting now begin. The hat became motionless once more. Applause broke out, though it was punctured, for the first time in Harry's memory, with mutterings and whispers. Across the great hall, students were exchanging remarks with their neighbors, and Harry, clapping along with everybody else, knew exactly what they were talking about. Branched out a bit this year, hasn't it? Said Ron, his eyebrows raised. Too right it has, said Harry. The Sorting Hat usually confined itself to describing the different qualities looked for by each of the four Hogwarts houses, and its own role in sorting them. Harry could not remember it ever trying to give the school advice before. I wonder if it's ever given warnings before, said Hermione, sounding slightly anxious. Yes, indeed, said nearly headless Nick knowledgeably, leaning across Neville toward her. Neville winced. It was very uncomfortable to have a ghost lean through you. The hat feels itself honor-bound to give the school due warning, whatever it feels. But if Professor McGonagall, who was waiting to read out the list of first-year names, was giving the whispering students the sort of look that scorches. Nearly headless Nick placed a see-through finger to his lips and sat primely up again as the muttering came to an abrupt halt. With a last frowning look that swept the four house tables, Professor McGonagall lowered her eyes to the long piece of parchment and called out, and we will wait to see what she called out till tomorrow. Yes, it's very, very late, my darling kitten. It's already 1:14. And we have to go to sleep because I have to get up at 8:30 tomorrow. And you have to get up even earlier, so why are you complaining? So I love you so much, I'm going to say goodnight to you on the recording first because you're an adorable kitten and I love you. And you're probably going to be listening to this, let's say, while you are making an omelette or something. And you're super adorable, and I love you. Goodnight. Grinnikin.